You're listening to the latest episode of African Research Excellence, DSW in Conversation, the podcast that celebrates African research excellence in global health R&D at a very important time for global health research. I'm delighted to be joined as usual by my colleague and co-host, Agustin Martin. How are you, Agustin?
I'm good, Owen, despite the rainy day on the 18 degrees Celsius. I can only be described as a proper Belgian summer. How are you?
Well, I'm good. It is a very Belgian summer. As you will have guessed, Agustin and I are recording remotely, both based in Brussels working for DSW. But as with most people working from home during the COVID-19 restrictions, Agustin, maybe you can introduce our guest for today before we start the interview.
Our guest today is Dr. Yon Kengazon, which is the founding director of the Africa Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Prior to his current position, he served as the acting deputy prime principal director of the Center for Global Health at the United States CDC and chief of the International Laboratory Branch of the Division of HIV and Tuberculosis at the CDC in the United States as well, which he joined in 1995. Prior to that, he was chief of virology at the WHO Collaborating Center on HIV Diagnostics at the Department of Microbiology in the Institute of Tropical Medicine, Antwerp. Dr. Kengazon actually lived in Belgium for 8 years, and he holds master's in tropical biomedical science from the Institute of Tropical Medicine in Antwerp, Belgium, and he earned an additional master's in medical and pharmaceutical sciences and a PhD in virology from the University of Brussels.
Which is a very long way of saying that he is an incredibly knowledgeable and expert man on the topic of public health and global health, and a particularly interesting man to talk to given the current COVID-19 pandemic. A quick note before the interview starts, we're speaking to him from the Africa CDC offices in Ethiopia. The connection is a little bit choppy now and then, but we've done our best to make sure that it sounds good for you guys. So without further ado, Dr. Nkengason, welcome to the show and thank you for coming on the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
As we usually do with our guests, maybe for those who are not so familiar with your work and the work of the Africa CDC, you can just give us a brief introduction about what the organization is and your role in it.
So the Africa Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, which is abbreviated Africa CDC, was launched in January 2017 at the sidelines of the Head of State Summit in Addis Ababa in 2017. And this was as the result of the devastating Ebola outbreak that occurred in West Africa in 2003-2004 timeline. However, before that, the head of states had nurtured the idea of establishing a public health institute for the continent for several reasons, because they recognized that the patterns of diseases was changing on the continent. They recognize that the prevalence of the endemic diseases like HIV, TB, malaria was increasing. They also knew that the continent was facing a crisis of non-communicable diseases, i.e. obesity, hypertension, and other challenges like maternal child health. So because of that, they had since 2013 been thinking of that, but Ebola prepared the concept of Africa CDC forward very quickly. So it was launched at the sideline of the Head of State Summit. I was fortunate to be selected to be the director of the Africa CDC, the founding director, in 2017 when it was launched. But prior to that, I have spent over 24 years with the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
You mentioned just there that, you know, there was a recognition that the patterns of disease was changing. Can you maybe just explain that a little bit and how things on the continent were changing?
You know, if you look at the only public health continental instrument that we have is the WHO, that is the World Health Organization, which was established around 1947. And if you recall, in 1947, the population of the entire continent was about 250 to 280 million people. That is from Cape Town to Cairo, area to Mogadishu. And now we are a continent of 1.3 billion people and projected to be 2.4 billion in the next 20 to 30 years. So, and with that comes the whole shifting patterns of diseases. And we also know that the environment is playing a critical role in disease spread on the continent. I mean, that for sure. And obesity is increasing then. I just give you an example. When, say, the WHO was created in 1947, there was no HIV/AIDS in Africa. And HIV/AIDS is a fairly recent disease on the continent, which was recognized around the early 1980s. But it has killed so many millions of Africans. As we are talking of the COVID pandemic, but we still have an HIV pandemic going on in Africa. It kills about 500,000 Africans every year. You also have the malaria endemic diseases that kills about 400,000 Africans every year, and tuberculosis. So if you combine TB, HIV, and malaria, over 1.2 million Africans die from those diseases. So the head of state thought that it was important to have a public health agency that can deal with that. Now, if you leave those aside and you look at other challenges like antimicrobial resistant issues, they are very much the increase. Okay, there are some projections from the O'Neill report that projects that if nothing is done by the year 2050, about 4.1 million Africans can actually be dying due to infections related to antimicrobial resistance. This requires that we pay, develop a continental body and a continental system and structure that can respond to these challenges.
Yeah. And you said, I mean, the organization was launched in 2017. What have been the key priorities for you as the head of the organization in the last 3 years since its launch?
There have been actually four key priorities for the organization. One is to support member states to strengthen their own national public health institutes. Okay, and that is similar to what the Public Health England will have, or the China CDC or the US CDC will have. So I think that we are very pleased with the movement that is happening on the continent, where about 14 countries now have a functional public health institution. And we are hoping that in the next coming years that each country will have that. Imagine a continent where 55 member states all have their functional mini CDCs, and then they all network with the African Union CDC. It will be a very powerful instrument to disease outbreaks if they do occur. So that has been one. The second thing that we have has been a priority for us is to network, to ensure that this national institutions or centers of excellence network and provide an enabling environment to harness the public health assets that exist in each region. I think we, as a continent of 1.3 billion people and a vast continent as we are, have to regionalize our public health efforts and say that where the five regional collaborating centers that Africa CDC has should create networks around them in each of the regions. I think that is very, very important. And we have been working on that very solidly. And we have established what we call the Regional Integrated Surveillance and Laboratory Network, in abbreviation RISNET, which are networks around the regional collaborating centers. The third area of focus has been workforce development. We recognize that public health workforce capacity and competence is very limited on the continent. And if you take just one area, again, just one area of public health needs is the epidemiologists, the field epidemiologists that are required. We currently only have about 1,500 of those, and our needs are around 6,000. So you can see that there's a gap there of about 4,500 epidemiologists that we need very urgently to meet our needs there. And then the last thing that we're looking at is really an information system, good information system, innovative information system that can be used in transmitting information, sharing data, and using the data in a very responsive way to support outbreak investigation and control.
As you mentioned just at the top of the interview, you know, you mentioned COVID-19. It's been interesting, particularly for us based in Europe, to see how the different, you know, regional powers and regional countries have been dealing with the pandemic. I mean, in Africa, on the African continent, it seems that pandemic control has gone better compared to, let's say, Northern Europe, or, you know, we look at the US even today. Is there an understanding of why that is, why it's been so well dealt with on the continent? And what's the situation like at the moment?
I think that Africa had several blessings at the start of this. We were one of the last continents to be to receive cases. So we had actually the advantage of observing this play out in China, observing this play out in Europe and the United States. So our first cases were reported on the continent on the 14th of February. And we did something very quick, which we brought the entire continent together and established or jointly developed what we call the Joint Continental Response Strategy, which was endorsed by all ministers. We then further developed a task force that is guiding the implementation of this strategy, which we coordinate from Africa CDC, and it brings everybody together. So I think that that was very important. Because of this, there are some very concrete results that resulted from this task force and the coordination. One was the ability to put in diagnostics across the continent very rapidly. I mean, if we were hit by COVID in January 2020, no country would have been ready to do anything because we just didn't have the diagnostics. But by February, we had South Africa and Senegal ready, and then we used those two countries to rapidly scale up the testing capacity and capabilities. Now we are testing in the millions and millions, but at that time, just having 100 tests for a country was almost like gold. Okay, so I remember scrambling in February during the African Union Head of State Summit to send 70 tests to the Minister of Health of Rwanda to go to do. So that's how we scrambled and put the continent. Then we provided trainings on infection prevention control, on enhanced airport screening and surveillance and other areas there to over 40 countries very rapidly. And all of this took place within 1 month. So then the leadership of the continent under the able and very capable guidance of President Ramaphosa was very quick to recognize the importance of leadership in this and inserted themselves in a very significant manner. President Ramaphosa is the current chair of the African Union. So they established two layers of coordination, one at the Bureau of the Head of States, where they met every 2 weeks to get briefings from Africa CDC, and then second was at the technical level of ministers. They established a coordinating meetings with ministers of finance, ministers of transport, and ministers of health. So I think that early recognition of the threat was very important and allowed countries to lock down very early where they still had just few cases. So because of that, the pandemic was delayed and we blocked the spread of the virus. But having said that, we are in a very different phase of the pandemic now. As you can recall, just last week alone, we had an increase of about 100,000 new cases, representing about 25% of the infections. I'm sure that this week, that is from last Thursday to this Thursday, there will be more than 100,000 new cases. So the pandemic is gaining full speed on the continent as we speak.
Something that was that's been brought up, and Augustine, maybe I'll let you in by some of our previous interviewees, was how useful and how ready the capacity infrastructure that's been built up on the continent over the last sort of decade to deal with research and clinical trials and as you said, diagnostics, was able to be shifted or to be utilized from dealing with one particular disease to then be deployed to deal with COVID. I guess that shows the value of investing in these kinds of resources at a time of an outbreak like this.
No, absolutely. You're very right. It's very clear that what the investments that were in place during the previous Ebola outbreak and other outbreaks was very instrumental. Like in Liberia, Sierra Leone, they have developed their National Public Health Institute. That has been very helpful. The whole concept of contact tracing using community workers has been in place. So they could deploy that. South Africa, too, has been working on that, using contact tracers and borrowing from the experience from HIV, the endemic infections that they have handled over the years. DR Congo, under the able leadership of Professor J.J. Muyembe, has been doing a great job at using the infrastructure that we built to support the Ebola outbreak to respond to this. In Nigeria, Dr. Chikwe has been fighting several outbreaks, including monkeypox, Lassa fever, and other meningitis in a significant way prior to COVID-19, and they could easily use that experience in responding to this this situation. And I think there's a lot to be learned from those lessons there, but the bigger job remains ahead. I think we should not be complacent. We currently have about close to 600,000 cases as we speak, with about 13,000 deaths. And the situation has not stabilized. We have not yet seen the peaking of a pandemic on the continent, and that remains a major source of worry.
Dr. Kengason, you mentioned one critical area of work for the Africa CDC is the training of additional epidemiologists. The EDCTP recently launched a joint call on disease outbreak and epidemic response to train a cohort of epidemiologists that was done together with the Africa CDC. What can you tell us about this collaboration with the EDCTP, and do you foresee it expanding to other areas or involving additional players into it?
Yeah, you know, I'm happy you raised that question. If you recall in my opening remarks, I did mention that one of the core areas that we wanted to focus on was workforce development. And underneath workforce development, there are about four different categories of priorities that we want to focus on. One is to have more master's program developed to support MPH, that is Master's in Public Health Program. And as we speak, we, Africa CDC, are supporting a cohort of students in South Africa at Wits University to complete their master's degrees in public health. The rationale behind that is that we want to believe that we, as a continent, we have enough public health institutions and universities that can provide training for MPH programs. That way people, the candidates don't need to fly to United States, Europe, China for such training, which are very expensive and is difficult for us to sustain. So with the EDCTP collaboration, we want to at least expand that lane of activity, and then also broaden it to include the field epidemiology training program, which will be the similar to the EIS program in the United States or the APN in Europe, where the European CDC manages the European field epidemiology training program. We also expanding that to include a laboratory leadership program, as well as the public health informatics program, but we are doing it one step at a time. So that is what that whole call, the partnership with EDCTP, is about. It's about increasing our public health workforce development using a competency-based approach, and also ensuring that we look outside the continent, but we also make maximum use of what we have on the continent.
I mean, you mentioned at the beginning that the creation of the Africa CDC was actually, or the at least the inception was in 2017, following the African Union European Union summit in Abidjan. I wonder what stock you take in terms of the EU support to the Africa CDC so far, because I mean it was part of the joint declaration between both continents to specifically support the creation and the expansion of the Africa CDC. So apart from this EDCTP call, what else has happened from the EU side?
So we have worked closely with the European CDC. I've been to European CDC and have high-level discussions with them. My colleagues have followed through, and we are working on a joint to the tune of about 20 million euro that will support that partnership. I think we are very excited with that prospect and look forward to strengthening that. I must say that our relationship with European CDC is very strong. We look forward to... We do coordinate with them every week. We just did today at 4 o'clock our time with our EOC, the Emergency Operations Center, connected with their EOC. And we have been doing that since the beginning of this outbreak. So I think before COVID-19 breakout, we were working very closely to strengthen that partnership and have some support and have the activities supported by the European Union. And we are very excited with that, and we believe that will help strengthen public health partnership between the European Union and the African Union Commission.
Mm, that's great to hear. And you talk about the importance of leadership, specifically mentioning President Ramaphosa. This year we will have the sixth African Union European Union summit, this time in Brussels on October the 28th. I was wondering, I mean, you've studied and live in Belgium, you know very well Europe, but you're a leading African scientist. How important is, in your view, in your personal and professional experience, this cooperation of both continents? And where do you see the opportunity to scale up cooperation? You mentioned epidemiology and training epidemiologists. What other areas could this partnership explore?
So, I mean, I'm very pleased that the African Union and the EU will be meeting soon. I were to make recommendations, I would say that they should really the recommendations, first of all, to the EU, then I'll make recommendations to the EU. My recommendation to the EU would be that the Africa CDC provides a fantastic platform to coordinate efforts on the continent. European investment in Africa is massive. If you pull what the French are putting in, what the Belgians are putting in, what the Germans are putting in, and others, it's a lot. But it has always been in a terribly uncoordinated manner and based on colonial lines, okay, where the French will focus on the Central and East and West Africa, and then, of course, the English, when they were still part of the EU, focused in the Southern and Eastern African countries. And by doing that, there's really no continental agenda and vision that they were following. Now, Africa CDC has established a continental agenda, okay, and a five-year strategic plan. We also have developed an African health strategy that spanned from 2016 to 2030. Through the partnership between the AU and the EU, you can actually look at that strategic direction that we've offered and say, these are the areas that we can strengthen and then hold each other accountable. For example, making sure that we support countries to develop their national public health, functional public health institutions, that we're doing that in a coordinated manner. We are not asking that the European Union members give us money. You can support us with some monies, but a lot of the money should go to those countries to build and support their national public health institute. But they should do that in a coordinated way with Africa CDC, using the frameworks that we have developed. Now, Africa CDC has developed some very nice framework documents that it can be used. So that is one area. The second area would be that we say, let's work collaboratively with Africa CDC and strengthen the networks. For example, if I take West Africa, there are about five powerhouses of public health institutions there, but they don't talk to each other. You have two Pasteur Institute there. You have the Nigeria CDC, the Medical Research Council in the Gambia, the Ngozi Institute. Wouldn't it be wonderful if through the kind of support that you can get from the EU, that we network these organizations at different levels, at a tertiary level, at a secondary level, and more at a more regional level there. That would be very powerful. And then to end, in the areas of local manufacturing, I mean, we started this conversation by saying that we should that diagnostics was a challenge in Africa. And it's not difficult to do manufacture diagnostics. You yourself, you mentioned my life in Belgium. I think I work and live in Belgium for about 8 years, worked at the Institute of Tropical Medicine. And I recall that in my days there as a researcher and as a student, I manufactured my own tests. If I needed to do a test for an antigen test, I had to do it myself. If I needed to do a Western blood, I do it myself. If I had to develop monoclonal antibodies, I went to the animal house at the basement of the Institute of Tropical Medicine and then immunized animals and then develop my monoclonal antibody. It's not difficult. So you wonder, why is it that a continent of 1.6 billion people have not single group that is manufacturing diagnostics? It cannot be acceptable. And diagnostic is the first line of defense. Okay, there are only three things that will bring this pandemic to an end. Do we have good diagnostics? Do we have vaccines? And do we have treatment? So if Africa is lagging behind all three, then it becomes very, very difficult. Then their dependency is just exaggerated. The dependency outside of the continent is too much. The last thing I'll say or end is that there's AMA, which is the African Medicine Agency that the AU is trying to develop. That is a very strong area of partnership that will help. I mean, you know that a lot of our challenges is with the counterfeit drugs that we receive on the continent. So strengthening such an agency will provide and is a great impetus for us to fight diseases appropriately. The issues of the antimicrobial resistance originate because of substandard drugs that we are using. So imagine if we have a functional regulatory body like the AMA, the African Medicine Agency, that will provide us with a strong organization to begin to regulate that just as you do in Europe.
I mean, you mentioned the African Medicines Agency. I remember when we discussed with Dr. Makanga, who was also interviewed for this podcast series, he briefly mentioned the strengthening efforts in Africa to build and harmonize regulatory systems for medicines, and the fact that the EDCTP is actually part of the African Medicines Regulatory Harmonization Program partnership together with other partners that we've talked to, like PATH or IABI. And it is indeed a very, very important point you made here. I wanted to talk now before turning to Owen on the, because we're talking about the importance of global leadership and political leadership, but also local engagement is very important. I mean, we are an NGO. We work with a lot of NGO partners in sub-Saharan Africa and in Europe. And one of the common topics that our partners tell us all the time is that you need to engage communities. You need to, you know, for their clinical research work, for fighting misinformation, stigma. So I wonder, how does the Africa CDC engage at the local level, and what those communities can do to help you in your work?
That's a very pertinent question. I mean, I've always stated, if you have listened to my various interviews, that the fight against COVID-19 will be won or lost at a community level. I think the community response is so important. And Africa CDC, and then even the vaccine work that we are trying to do is going to be vital to engage the community in a significant way. Africa CDC, as a young organization that is just 3.5 years old, has not yet developed a comprehensive program to engage the community. But we started before COVID developing a network of social scientists that were going to be a gateway through which we use them in engaging the community. So the point you raised is very, very important. Even the work we did in DR Congo with the Ebola outbreak in North Kivu was only successful when community engagement became important. And we look forward to doing similar with all of these the efforts that we are doing with COVID-19. So community, your question lends itself to the whole thinking about our response. Disease response on the continent would not be entirely successful if it's only dependent on public health experts doing this. It has to be a combination of civil society, community engagement, and of course, political leadership and willingness.
Just on that point of political leadership or willingness, I think we're just about to wrap up with a couple of final questions from me. Two very brief ones, really. For that political or administrative leadership, what kind of would you have one message or thing that you would want to say to either European or African decision makers? And then the final question, Dr. Nkengason, how optimistic are you over the next couple of years in your role as the head of the Africa CDC in the fight against the diseases on the continent?
No, I'm very very optimistic that the wisdom and the vision of the head of state to establish the Africa CDC was very timely. I think they are seeing it that the return on the investment from Africa CDC is there for them to see. When they gather every 2 weeks, they get directions, they see how Africa CDC is supporting countries. So my message to the leadership is one, that strengthening health systems, as we have now seen with COVID infection, is an important investment and is not necessarily a cost. And it cannot be a cost. It's an investment. We have seen the financial damage, the economic damage, the social disruption that a disease outbreak, a single pathogen can bring to us, to bring all of our countries to our knees. And we should take that very deliberately. My strongest hope and wish is that when COVID is over, we shouldn't do the usual thing, which is we forget about it very quickly and we move on to other things and neglect the healthcare system and the investment in public health systems. I mean, if we do that, it will be a monumental mistake. We will be judged very, very harshly by history if we make such repeated mistakes by the next generations to come. The COVID has taught us a mighty lesson that we are more connected than we thought, and that global solidarity has its limits, and Africa has to fend for itself and have the right infrastructure and instruments to defend itself in terms of health security. That will be my message to the leadership.
And on that powerful message from Dr. John Kangason from the Africa CDC, we say thank you to our guest. Wish you luck in your work over the next couple of years. I'm sure you've got your hands full. And thank you very much for coming on for the interview today.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
And that's it for today's episode of African Research Excellence, DSW in Conversation. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and all good podcast platforms. You can find more information about DSW at dsw.org. and across our social channels on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Until next time.